face it, winter can wreak havoc on your parking lot. And the last thing your customers need is to dodge potholes, which might make them dodge your business altogether. Make sure they don't have bumps on the way to your door by calling U.S. Pavement. 1-800-PAVEMENT. Let U.S. Pavement smooth the road to your door. U.S. Pavement has paved the way for successful businesses all over New England since 1985. Call now, and a member of their expert team will evaluate your site and give you a price that won't leave a hole in your budget. Call U.S. Pavement at 1-800-PAVEMENT or visit uspavement.com.
B-Pod Studios.
No one says it like they do.
What do you mean?
Well, what do you mean?
Felger and Mads.
I'm just making it up. Totally making it up.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Agenda-free Friday, driven by the Bernardi Auto Group. Chris Gasper of the Boston Globe joins us in our Town Fair Tire Studios. Hi, Gasper.
Hey, what's going on? How are you guys?
Good, you?
Oh, we got a ton going on.
Yeah.
It's great. Great time of year. So sporty.
Yeah, this is save some of the stuff for the Major League Baseball All-Star.
Right up our alley. Yeah. Thoughts on the draft. We'll start with that and the Patriots draft pick last night.
Yeah, I mean, I like the player. I've seen him play a little bit at Arizona State. He is a guy who's he's hyper-competitive. He was the guy they went to when they needed to play. I think he liked being that guy. He is very physical. He doesn't get a ton of separations, but he has really good hands. So I like the player. The only thing that gives me some pause is,
but.
Okay, yeah, here's the but. I don't think this is a great year for wide receivers in this draft. I think it's a year where you're just as likely to get somebody who turns into a really good starting wide receiver in, say, the fourth round as you are the first round. So of all the years for Bill to decide that he's going to use a first-round pick on a wide receiver, I don't think this was the year, even though I like the player. You know, and that's what makes me a little nervous, because I don't think this is a particularly deep wide receiver draft. Or let me walk that back. There's depth there, but I don't think that there's necessarily the sort of high-end talent, the guys that you would look at and say, okay, this guy's like a slam dunk. I don't think there's a huge gap between a guy you're taking at 32 in the first round and some guy you're going to take in the third round.
Well, what about their history when it comes to integrating young receivers?
Yeah, and look, some of that obviously is going to be on Brady. I think it's good he already reached out to the kid, and it sounds like the kid's excited to work with Brady.
Yeah, but when?
You mean on social media, right?
Yeah, well, because Brady's not going to OTAs, right?
Yeah, that means it's precious little.
It's a valid point, but you know, even if Brady's there,
oh, they don't mean it's overrated.
I think the issue is that, and I've had people tell me this before, and I've mentioned this on the show. One, someone in that locker room told me last year, look around. Do you see a lot of young guys at tight end and wide receiver? There's a reason for that. Brady doesn't have a ton of patience. Two, it doesn't matter what Josh McDaniels teaches him. It doesn't matter whoever the new wide receivers coach is, whoever that's going to be, some Belichick cousin or whatever. It doesn't matter who that is, because they can tell N'Keal Harry, this is the way it is on paper. This is the way it is on your iPad. But when you get out there, the offense is what Brady sees. That's it. And if you don't see what he sees, you're done. Just ask Chris Hogan.
Yeah, I just, it was a myth to begin with. But I don't ever want to hear it again, that the Patriots never draft for need, that that's for bad teams or stupid teams or bad teams get themselves into a position where they have to draft a certain position because they've left themselves high and dry. And the Patriots never fall into that trap. Would you please? That was never true. Drafting for need's okay. You need to at times. And it's a smart thing to do at times. And, you know, I mean, and again, just to go off on that tangent, what are you going to be? Matt Millen, who drafts receivers three straight years because they're the best player on the board? Or what? You're going to have Vince Wilfork as a second-year nose tackle and keep drafting nose tackles? That's stupid. Need is a big influencer there, and it should be, which is fine. Sure. But this myth that the Patriots never fall into that trap. I mean, this was as big of a need pick as I've ever seen in my life. I mean, honestly, they ran out of free agent options. Gronk's decision came late, so they couldn't sign anyone. They tried on everybody, didn't land anybody. Everything's dried up. No one's left.
Yeah, I mean, they're pushing a little. You know, they pushed a little in the trade market. We'll see. I don't know what's going on with Aguilar at this point, but, you know, they were interested in Sterling Shepard. I think they made some calls on Sanu in Atlanta and were told not interested, no. So, I mean, they certainly tried. They turned over a lot of rocks. But by the time they got to 32, you're right, there was a crying need there.
So, I mean, I'm okay with drafting for need. I think it's just a functional part of doing it. It's just...
I hate the idea of them taking a receiver in the first round. I hate it.
Why?
because of their history and because of Brady. I do. I hate it. And so I recognize the need as much as anybody. And Chris, honestly, I didn't even factor in what you were saying about the draft. Like that, you know, you can get the same player in the fourth round and get in the first. I'm just telling you, with their history, Belichick has been spewing this stuff about how you can get the same receiver later in the draft than any. And this year with Tom Brady, he goes out and gets him in the first round when they have other needs on top of it too. Like, I just, that one blows me away. I don't love their ability to integrate young receivers. I said this consistently from the beginning. I don't want a receiver in the first round. I'd have preferred a defensive lineman. And again, I hope the kid can play. If he's a stud, great. That's good for everybody. Don't get me wrong. But philosophically, I hate it.
But you know what might help him? And look, Malcolm Mitchell was pretty good when he was here. And what was Malcolm Mitchell best at with Tom Brady?
Oh, coming back to the ball.
Those back shoulder throws. And so those are not elaborate routes. That's based on trust. It's based on timing. This kid, he can do that. And he's big and he's physical. Like, if it becomes sort of what they do, not just with the young receivers, but when Kenny Britt was here, the guys that they try and integrate during the season, it's okay, you're going to run a nine route, you're going to run a go route, you're going to run these stop fade back shoulder things, and you're going to run some slants. This kid, with his build, he can do that.
Okay, but you need him to be an impact right away.
Do you?
How long is Brady here?
Well, no, but what do you have at the position? Why wouldn't you need him?
So this is sort of my point. Is that
how you'll define impact? I mean, if he's your number three wide receiver, and is that, I mean,
yeah, that's good enough.
500 receiving yards?
Really? Who's number two?
Well, it's probably right. It's Dorsett.
What? If no. They need this guy to be their number two receiver out of the gate. That's what they need.
They're going to run the ball, which I tried to tell you guys before, but never mind.
Then why did they take a receiver?
I don't want to go down that rabbit hole, so never mind.
I don't
thin at that position. They need some help there.
Again, so again, philosophically, I don't like a receiver in the first round for them because of what their history has been with that position in the draft. I just think I don't like that. That part of it, I don't like. I hope I'm wrong. Okay, but how many times have people shoved down our throats about how hard it is to integrate a receiver in the league? Belichick, you can't evaluate him. Offense is different. You know, no harder position, period. The offenses are different than they are in college, period. Give me that crap over and over and over again. And then I read this on ESPN the other day. Over the past 10 drafts, 19 of the 125 receivers taken in the first three rounds have reached a Pro Bowl. That's a 15% success rate.
Yeah, it's. I would say it is the biggest bust out position in the NFL draft. I think there are more receivers that go bust than any other position I can think of.
Huh.
It is. It is a big bust. I mean, ask the Vikings. Laquon Treadwell versus Adam Thielen. Which guy do you think they thought was going to be the Pro Bowl?
Well, and that's the other thing is that sometimes it can take a couple of years with a receiver. It's not unusual. Well, this guy's here for a couple, maybe. Like, but I think they need an impact now. Now.
And maybe he is. All I know is it wasn't a quarterback, so I'm happy.
Okay, on that note, Chris, you think a quarterback's coming tonight or the next couple days?
I wouldn't be surprised. It would make some sense. You know, I've been pumping the tires of Will Greer from West Virginia. I think he'd be a good pick, and I think you and I are in agreement. I heard you say this. I sort of feel the same way. Look, I'm between you and Jim, and I think there is a middle ground. There's a happy middle ground there, and what it is, look, we're going to use other picks to buttress this team right now and augment it and maximize Brady. But who are these teams who are lucky enough to get the replacement quarterback right on the first kick at the can?
Exactly.
I mean, you got to take as many kicks at that thing as you can to make sure that you can get somebody in there. So I think you can do both. And the way you do that is, you know, you try and find a Russell Wilson, Dak Prescott in the third or fourth round. That's fine. As long as it's not, you know, Ryan Mallett.
Okay. Who would be the wrong guy to take? Would Drew Locke be the wrong guy to take?
Yes, he would, because he's not accurate, and I don't think you can teach accuracy. He would be another sort of Jake Locker, Blaine Gabbert, you know, type of guy. Like, looks, Kyle Bowler looks really good. You know, really looks the best when he's in like shorts and a t-shirt, but you put him out on the field and it's not happening. I don't like him. Tyree Jackson from Buffalo, who's sort of a bigger, longer quarterback, long windup. Byron Leftwich ish. I think he'd be the wrong guy to take. I don't love the guy you guys hit with the marker.
The Northwestern kid?
Yeah, Clayton Thorson. I don't love him. I think he's a little overrated. The guys I like Greer. I like Ryan Finley. I think Ryan Finley at least will be a decent backup in the league. He's really smart. He's accurate. He might not have the arm talent, you know, as the guy who drafted Cleveland Farrell fourth said, you might not have the arm talent, the first round arm talent, but I think he'll at least be a serviceable backup quarterback. Like Finley reminds me a little bit of, you know, Chad Pennington after Pennington had the shoulder stuff, where he's going to get by on like guile and accuracy and sort of reading the defense. I think that's sort of his upside.
I want the Northwestern.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah,
the Felgren Mavs big board.
I'm not a fan.
I think me neither. I just want to dump on him.
He's a little overrated.
I just want to dump on Jones. All right, we've got more with Gasper. Your thoughts on the draft and the draft pick and Gasper's handicap of the Bucks and Celtics. That's coming up next with your calls. Don't go anywhere.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Hey, it's Felger here with a G.
Looking for hope? House of Possibilities offers children and adults with disabilities a path to greater independence. From social to recreational programs to overnight respite and career and community access opportunities, House of Possibilities is changing the way people see disabilities and their program participants see themselves. Visit houseofpossibilities.org to learn more or to support their work. That's houseofpossibilities.org. House of Possibilities. See what belonging can do.
Face it, winter can wreak havoc on your parking lot. And the last thing your customers need is to dodge potholes, which might make them dodge your business altogether. Make sure they don't have bumps on the way to your door by calling U.S. Pavement. 1-800-PAVEMENT. Let U.S. Pavement smooth the road to your door. U.S. Pavement has paved the way for successful businesses all over New England since 1985. Call now, and a member of their expert team will evaluate your site and give you a price that won't leave a hole in your budget. Call U.S. Pavement at 1-800-PAVEMENT or visit uspavement.com.
Making sense of Boston sports.
There's no catching and no throwing. Anyone can play, no matter how hopelessly unathletic they are.
Felger and Mass, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
How is Antetokounmpo so dominant, a player like that?
Well, first of all, he leads the league in dunks, and he leads the league in scoring in the paint. So I think that, I mean, you still could win. I mean, it's just a different way. It's a different version of having a Shaq or a Wilt Chamberlain on the court. I mean, guys that can get baskets easy inside. That still works in our game today. Lay-ins and free throws still work. And he's also a terrific passer. I think he's probably assisted to, I don't know, at least in the top few assists for three-point shots. So he gets in the paint. He puts so much pressure on your defense at the rim. And on top of that, he's a terrific defender that guard multiple positions. And he's 6'11 and a protector at the rim. So, yeah, he's a very versatile player, three-point shot or not. He's a fantastic player.
Danny Ainge on Giannis. As the Bucks and Celtics get ready to go, game one Sunday afternoon here on 98.5 The Sports Hub. The key to the Celtics stopping Giannis, something else. How do you handicap the series, Chris?
I think Giannis is going to get his. It's, can you slow down the other guys? You know, don't let Chris Middleton get off the way that he did last year in the series where he shot, you know, 60% from the field and made some really big shots. Don't let Brooke Lopez knock down wide open threes. No, don't let Mirotić knock down wide open threes. So I think, look, I'm not looking at this and saying, hey, some combination of Al Horford, Jaylen Brown, Semi Ojeleye is going to take out Giannis Antetokounmpo. Like, that's not going to happen. It, really, your advantage in this series is that you have more depth, particularly with Brogdon missing at least the first two games. Malcolm Brogdon will miss at least the first two games because he's another guy who's a Celtic killer. So your advantage is that you should be able to do it with an ensemble cast, and they're going to lean really heavily on Giannis. So, you know, Giannis is going to get his points. But what do you do with the other guys? I think that's going to be what it is.
Who do you like?
I like the Bucks for this reason. They have the home court. I think that they are a better outside shooting team than they were last year. Obviously, a major upgrade in terms of coaching. And something I know you guys have sort of discussed as well is, you know, Budenholzer, the way he plays, it's sort of antithetical in today's NBA, but he will like pack the paint defensively and make the other team shoot threes. And sometimes that works against him, but it will make some of the guys like Hayward and Irving have a harder time getting to the rim and getting some easy baskets. And I think you saw that during the regular season with Kyrie against the Bucks, that it wasn't always easy for him to finish around the rim against Milwaukee the way he does normally against other teams.
I mean, you know, and this is Hayward's game too, right? And Chris has touched on that. Like, you know, Hayward loves to go in there, create contact.
Slasher.
Absolutely. So, like, you know, to me, this is going to be for the Celtics. I think they're going to have to make jumpers. Like, they're going to have to make threes and make jumpers.
And make them in Milwaukee, which was, you know, the problem. And they made them at home last year in the series. Obviously, no Kyrie, no Hayward. They made them at home. Terry Rozier made them at home. They didn't make them on the road. That was the issue.
See, that's why I think that Hayward's huge in this series. He's a veteran guy, right? Even Marcus Morris, if you want to throw him in. And I know Murray's going to love hearing that one, given what he thinks about Morris. But your veteran guy, the young guys are going to crap their pants on the road. They're going to. I expect it. Now, I hope they don't. I hope Tatum or Brown, like, you know, there are flashes with those guys. Obviously, we say there are balls there. They can handle it. So maybe they'll step up. But to me, it comes down to the veteran guys making jumpers on the road.
I think the Celtics have more talent. I think they're also more conducive to win close games. Giannis is not a last possession kind of guy, not even close. Middleton is. But the Bucks' best player is not that guy at the end of the game. That can be problematic for him. If it's a close series, seven-game series, I like the Celtics, as I said earlier, I actually picked Celtics in seven. But the thing that works against the Celtics, even though they have more talent, is that how does the talent feel about each other? And how's the perseverance? How's the fortitude? How's their ability to grind out a series if they go down 0-2? And I think the Celtics aren't the only team in this boat. Maybe you're seeing it in Golden State right here where there's some cracks. And is it because guys got one foot out the door? And what's going to look like in Toronto if they go down 0-2? How is Kawhi Leonard going to look? I think there's a lot of teams dealing with this. But if the Celtics come back down 0-2, what's that plane ride like? And never mind if they hate each other or not, but could it simply be, and it's not just Kyrie, it's others, but primarily Kyrie. I'm gone anyway, man.
Right. What if one of the young guys is like, you're leaving anyway? So, the hell with you.
And that whole thing starts back up again.
Like all unravels.
That's still on the table. Now, they come back 1-1 with some wind at their sails. That's different. But if they get down in the series, you know, because this crap hasn't gone away. There was a report today, Ian Bagley of ESPN has Durant in New York pretty much guaranteed, and most everyone in the league thinking Kyrie's going with him. I'll read you from it real quick. Ian Bagley of ESPN. If Durant comes to New York, he's not coming to be part of a rebuild. So it's hard to see him committing to the Big Apple without another star in tow. Boston Celtics guard Kyrie Irving, who has a close relationship with Durant, is one of the players who could join him. Hornets guard Kemba Walker also has fans in the Knicks organization. Multiple executives doing their homework on the free agent class, though, fully expect Durant to sign with the Knicks and Irving to join him. So there's just another, like, this is, you know, this hasn't gone away.
No, it's been the rumor. I mean, you know, Durant to the Knicks is like a done deal, but that's been the rumor that Kyrie would come with him, and that was the whole thing at the All-Star game in Charlotte. You know, he had to play in the All-Star game, and then he got all mad when he got asked about the video somebody took of him talking with Durant in the hallway there. They are friends, so they could have been talking about anything. But
yeah, but I don't know how you don't look at that frolicking and grab ass and not get a little worried as a Celtics fan between those two.
Totally. Totally. I mean, even them walking off the court together at halftime of that game, like, something's
the only thing
there.
Missing was a goose.
Do you think that Durant's thing is impacting the Warriors right now and that the Warriors are vulnerable?
I think it's impacting them in this way. They know he's gone. They feel like he's a carpetbagger. He came there, used them to get rings in the two finals MVPs, which he definitely earned, but that he was not really committed to them. And I think there's guys on that team who thought he was committed to them long term, that he was keeping his options open with these 1-year deals to help them, you know, to make sure. And that's the way his camp pitched it. Yeah. You know, I'm going to help you bring back Sean Livingston and Andre Iguodala, when it really wasn't about that. He's like, I got my rings now. And now, you know, you can just sort of tell. It's interesting to me. I like Durant, but I remember when he was just, I'm not going to say kid, but just the guy with the backpack after the game who wanted to talk basketball. And good for him. People grow and change. But I think he's trying to become something he's not. This whole boardroom thing.
Yeah,
and
a global.
Yeah, he's with these venture capitalists in Silicon Valley. Like, good for expanding and broadening your horizons. I'm all for that. But I'm just not sure, like, going to New York and being the guy and sort of mixing business and basketball, I don't know if that fits his personality.
There was always a sweetness to Durant, and now it's like this, there's a fake act that he's doing. It's like, I'm the bad guy.
Like, well, I just sort of feel like
he's trying to be a mogul.
Yeah, I feel like he sort of looks, he's like, why is he with LeBron? Like, with LeBron, I think LeBron's always had that mindset of, like, you know, I'm a brand, I'm a business. I think that comes naturally to LeBron, and I give him credit for that. I think Durant sort of looks at it and says, well, this is what I'm supposed to do. I'm not sure he really looks at it and says, okay, this is who I am. He's just like, well, I see LeBron doing this. So, you know, let me do this and put my spin on it with these Silicon Valley VC guys. It's just, it's just a little different. I think it's rubbing some of those Warriors guys the wrong way.
To me, I just think that it's interesting to see how it plays out when if these teams get to the brink and the guys who are gone, and you're not the only one, but the Warriors, the Raptors with Kawhi, if I'm missing anyone, let me know. It's like, what's gonna be the buy-in factor and the resilience of those teams that these guys have one foot out the door anyway? And how that all – and let's see this series.
Well, I'll throw the Sixers in there too. I mean, Embiid and Simmons are there. Right. Jimmy Butler, right. You know, Tobias Harris. Like, what's the deal there?
Thank you.
If it sort of starts to sink, you know, what goes on there? Is it sort of Embiid and Simmons being like, well, you guys are just renting. You know, we're owning. We own this franchise. And does Butler feel the way he did? We all know how Jimmy Butler interacts with young players. You know, how that went in Minnesota. I told you guys about that. So, I mean, how does that – go if that series starts to turn.
Okay. Ugly. It'll be ugly.
So there we go. Celtics and draft. Your calls on whatever you want, agenda-free, I promise, right to you after Murray's update.
Looking for hope? House of Possibilities offers children and adults with disabilities a path to greater independence. From social to recreational programs to overnight respite and career and community access opportunities, House of Possibilities is changing the way people see disabilities and their program participants see themselves. Visit houseofpossibilities.org to learn more or to support their work. That's houseofpossibilities.org. House of Possibilities. See what belonging can do. The Dave McGilvery Finish Strong Foundation's goals are to inspire and empower youth across New England and beyond to increase physical activity, expand literacy, and build community and self-esteem through running, reading, and performing acts of kindness. Join us in our mission to empower youth through fitness and education. With your support, we can provide the opportunities for youth to cross their own finish line one step at a time. Together, we can build a stronger, healthier future. Go to DaveMcGilveryFoundation.org for more information.
Oh, I like this.
This is Felger and Mass.
Part of me wants to do it just to feel what that feels like.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
The Giannis recipe, what to do, is not complicated to understand. As Kenny Smith put it so very well on TNT, it's a version of the kind of stuff we've been saying for the last couple of years. 15, 18 feet from the basket beyond, he's Clark Kent. Once he gets inside the free throw line, he's Superman, and you can't stop him. So it's going to be multiple guys, and where does he get the ball, and can you stop him from? I've never seen anybody get to the rim. He gets to the rim in one stride from the free throw line. And that's why he said, since they've been keeping track of dunks, he had more this year than anybody's ever had. So he's just a dominant force. And again, one of the reasons why they are not the team they were last year between Giannis and the guy that, to me, as an athlete, when you lose, people move on. You forget last year's series, right? You know who didn't forget last year's series and has been living with it for a year? Eric Bledsoe has. And he is. It's funny because he doesn't have the same matchup with Rozier. Obviously, he's got to deal with Kyrie. But this moment, this series has been driving Eric Bledsoe, the specter of getting a second chance against Boston for a year. He was great in the first round against Detroit. And he right now, to me, is the wild card in the series.
This is why I like the Celtics to win. Now, Eric Bledsoe's the X factor. Ainge was talking about this too. If it's about Eric Bledsoe, who's, I'm sorry, a joker. I think he's a loser. Then the Bucks lose. I mean, all of a sudden, this guy's got a hair across his ass because he let Terry Rozier beat him last year.
He took. I think he underestimated Rozier last year. I think okay. You know, deep down inside, he would admit that.
Okay. Now he's got Kyrie Irving. So we forget about Rozier.
Yeah.
And so if it's about Eric Bledsoe, the Bucks are porked.
But if he plays better in the series, look, all he has to do is it's not all about him, but he just has to play better than he did last year.
Know your role.
And you know what's going to help him? No Marcus Smart, at least it seems that way in the beginning, because, you know, Kyrie takes charges and help defense, but, you know, Eric Bledsoe can probably get to some spots against Kyrie Irving.
I just don't like his makeup.
I can tell.
I just think he's an accident waiting to happen. And the thing about Giannis and the dunks, set NBA record for dunks, he ain't going to get NBA record dunks in the playoffs. That's not, you know, that stuff goes away in the playoffs.
I mean, even if he does, they're only worth two.
So anyway, back to your phones as promised. Jack in Providence on the NFL draft for Chris. Go ahead, Jack.
Yeah, hey. Say, how are you guys?
We're good. Just peachy. What do you got?
Great. So with the Giants pick, Daniel Jones, you know, people are saying that Dwayne Haskins is a lot like Tom Brady, but I think Daniel Jones, he's coveted to be better than Tom Brady. And I'll tell you
what. I'm going to stop you.
Oh, my God. That was my least favorite pick. I hated that
Tell me
pick.
About the pick.
Yeah, I just think he's one of these guys where, again, it's sort of, you know, the Kyle Buller effect. Like, you look at the guy, he does what he does at the combine. He looks the part. He has the right pedigree, right? He knows the Mannings. And he was coached by David Cutcliffe and all this other stuff. And then, like, go look at the completion percentage. And some of these guys, too, like, Duke's become a better football school, right? Don't get me wrong. But some of these guys that play at schools like this, like, this happened to Cutler. You know your team's not that good. So you get in this mindset. It happened to your guy, Clayton Thorson. You get in this mindset of you're just going to take all these chances because you know your team doesn't have the same talent level as the other teams you're playing. Then you get in the NFL and you think you can take those same chances. Like, it's hard to remove that from a guy's game, that sort of, you know, risky play, that gunslinger, that I need to make it happen, it's all on me mentality. And I think that's how you make mistakes. I do not like that pick.
At the very least,
way overdrafted.
At the very least, they didn't have to take him where they took
no,
him.
No.
Okay, so that's going to be my question. Forget about whether a guy can play or not. How about the management of the board?
Terrible.
Could they have traded down 20 picks and still gotten him?
I think so. I mean, at least, you know, all you have to do is trade down and make sure you're in front of the Redskins. And maybe they were nervous about the Redskins moving up. You don't know, right? I mean, I heard Charlie Castle talk about this on NFL Network, basically saying, as a GM, sometimes, like, if you have the conviction for the player, you have to overdraft him because, you know, somebody else could move up. If you don't have good intel, that's fine. I just don't like the player, and I think he was overdrafted.
They had another pick at 17. He would have been there. I don't care what that doofus on his hairpiece was saying.
Eric in the car on the Patriots. Hi, Eric.
Yeah, how you doing? Doesn't the Patriots drafting a wide receiver force Brady to attend those passing camps in the spring?
Okay, interesting question on your bad phone.
Well, this is sort of my point. I wonder if this is Belichick sort of saying, Tom, we need you to come now. We need you to come now. We took a receiver in the first round. OTAs, every snap counts. Can you show up, please? Can you come to OTAs? What do you think? No?
Well, I mean, who's saying he's... So he's not there for the...
See, Chris knows it's wrong for a quarterback to miss a passing camp, but he doesn't want to
okay,
go...
Okay, no, but hold on. Let me answer the question. Who's to say he's going to miss the passing camp part of the offseason program?
We don't know yet. Let's not get someone in trouble for something he hasn't done.
So
well,
I
know
he did last year, right?
He did. But I'm saying I know... So the offseason program has started, and he's not there. I get it. But there are different phases. So couldn't you miss one phase and then show up for another phase?
Sure.
Yeah, the only phase that matters is really that passing game.
Yeah.
I mean, right now they're just stretching.
So that's what I'm talking about. Is he going to show up now?
I think he could show up.
Mm. Good move by Bill. Bill Gasper, wins again.
Gasper's so cagey with his opinion making.
I'm
good
just
move
saying,
by Bill.
I think he could show up. That's all I'm saying.
I just hope that Brady, you know, trusts the kid actually throws to him.
Mike in North Carolina with an NFL thought. Hi, Mike.
Hey, how you doing? So real quick, I investigate child abuse for a living, and I wanted to comment on the Tyreek Hill thing. When Department of Social Services gets a report of physical or sexual abuse, they do their own diligent efforts to figure out if the child has been inappropriately disciplined or whatever they do. They also send a report to that to the DA's office. The DA does their due diligence to figure out if there's enough to prosecute. If they don't find there's enough to prosecute, they just close it on their end.
So what's your point? So what's the point?
Well, the bottom line is that I don't think it got reopened just for the fact that that audio got out. If that child got hurt and he had broken his arm, that child would have been removed from the house. So the bottom line is I don't think that anything had actually occurred. The DA just ended up opening up again because the audio came out. The DA has all that information to figure out if they're going to prosecute to begin with.
Got it.
Now the audio's out.
Okay, the audio's – so the prosecutors and the police are reacting to a PR thing because the audio – he sounds like such an a-hole on that audio. I mean, simple as that.
So I feel compelled every time someone calls in on this, because look, it's reprehensible.
Yeah, but he's actually defending Hill.
No, I know he is. Is he a Chiefs fan?
No, it's so true. So this is what I'm saying.
Like, there's an ulterior motive.
Well, right. So that's what I'm saying is I feel compelled to ask every one of these people that calls about Tyreek Hill who they're a fan of before they even talk about it. I need to know. Patriots fans, forget it. Like, because we know what their agenda is.
Or anyone with an axe to grind against Goodell. It's just another thing. Why don't they? Four games for balls, but, you know, nothing for a guy who broke his kid's arm. Like, everyone just wants to go back and cry about the footballs. And that's really what you're just opening it up for. But that's not just here. If you ask someone in New Orleans, they all got to, you know.
Bounty gate.
So it's like, anyone's got a beef with Goodell. It just opens it up for them to cry about Goodell.
Tyreek Hill's history is pretty well documented.
The guy's a bad dude.
So there's a lot believable about Tyreek Hill, whether the case was reopened after the audio came out or what have you. There's enough smoke there to wonder. Okay, there is enough smoke there to wonder. So all I'm saying is with regard to the calls, if you are a fan of the Patriots or a competitor of the Patriots. And I mean serious competitor. Okay, I'm not talking about the, you know, Rams. Although, you know, that one qualifies now too, I guess. I don't want to hear it. Because I can't take you seriously.
Okay. I think that dude was on the level, actually. Long commercial-free segment is next. Bruins last night. We'll get back to that. Celtics coming up this weekend. The NFL draft all on the board.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Face it, winter can wreak havoc on your parking lot. And the last thing your customers need is to dodge potholes, which might make them dodge your business altogether. Make sure they don't have bumps on the way to your door by calling U.S. Pavement. 1-800-PAVEMENT. Let U.S. Pavement smooth the road to your door. U.S. Pavement has paved the way for successful businesses all over New England since 1985. Call now, and a member of their expert team will evaluate your site and give you a price that won't leave a hole in your budget. Call U.S. Pavement at 1-800-PAVEMENT or visit uspavement.com.
The Dave McGilvery Finish Strong Foundation's goals are to inspire and empower youth across New England and beyond to increase physical activity, expand literacy, and build community and self-esteem through running, reading, and performing acts of kindness. Join us in our mission to empower youth through fitness and education. With your support, we can provide the opportunities for youth to cross their own finish line one step at a time. Together, we can build a stronger, healthier future. Go to DaveMcGilveryFoundation.org for more information.
Felger and Mass.
Oh.
98.5, The Sports Hub.
He can run a vertical route. He can run a comeback. And he may be able to run a post. That's Metcalf. Metcalf's a three-route runner. Now, all you fantasy players at home, if you like that, if you got those three routes in your offense, God bless you, take them. But you're going to have to run some option routes. Mm-hmm. You're going to have to run some in cuts. You're going to have to run some snags. You got to run a tree to be a really good receiver. To me, The kid, Keneal Harry?
Keneal Harry, yeah.
Now, to me, that's a legitimate receiver.
Right.
That guy can play anywhere on the field. He can play F inside. He can play X outside. He can go inside, make the catch. And when the ball's in his hands, he's a beast. He's a freaking beast. He can go get it. Now, everybody has him going late one, early two. Okay, great. You take Metcalf before him, you're an idiot. You're an idiot.
That's Belichick Bobo Mike Lombardi.
He butchered the name as bad as you did.
So, Keneal Harry. Is that it?
Nikhil.
Why do I keep doing that?
Nikhil.
They did it.
They did, yeah. Nikhil.
Oh, that's why.
So remember, like Shaquille.
Nikhil.
But with an N.
Nikhil Harry.
The kid, Keneal Harry?
Keneal Harry, yeah.
Now, to me, that's a legitimate receiver.
It's like the Antonio Bryant. Bryant thing. Yeah, it's contagious.
The kid, Keneal Harry?
Keneal Harry, yeah.
Now, to me, that's a legitimate receiver.
So not only did the big board have it, not only did Jones claim to have it. I still don't know about that. Mike Lombardi was telegraphing it. When was that podcast from?
It was Monday.
So, wow.
Monday or Tuesday.
Wow. Okay, so earlier in the week.
You're an idiot.
So that's sort of telegraphing it, where Mike Lombardi is saying, if you know, and Metcalf, I thought was a consensus better, higher rated than
Harry. A lot of people like Metcalf. You know, honestly, I didn't even think Metcalf was the best receiver to come out of his own school this year. I like A.J. Brown better. Metcalf is just a physical freak, though, and he ripped it up at the combine. And so people fall in love with that and just his sort of physical stature. You know, those guys tend to climb up the board.
Okay, so anyway, Lombardi knew.
Keneal Harry?
Yeah, of course he did, yeah.
Keneal Harry, yeah.
And he even...
Yeah, Keneal, yeah.
I love how, you know, if you like Metcalf over Harry, you're just a fantasy player. Like, that's a good rip. Jones, how's your fantasy team? These are fantasy players. But if you know real football, you need a snag route, whatever the hell that is, then you like this Keneal Harry guy.
You're an idiot.
So
the kid, Keneal Harry?
Keneal Harry, yeah.
So how do you feel about that analysis?
You're an idiot.
In terms of Harry being better than Metcalf?
Yeah, Metcalf only has three routes.
Yeah, I don't like Metcalf. I think he's a workout warrior. I've said that before. I mean, I just was saying, this is an eye of the beholder draft when it comes to the wide receivers. You know, Metcalf's a guy that you look at that he's a physical freak, and your fans are going to be all excited when you draft him. But I don't think he's even the best receiver from his school in this draft. I like A.J. Brown better than him, and I thought he was a better player at Ole Miss than DK Metcalf.
That's Metcalf. Metcalf's a three-route runner. Now, all you fantasy players at home, if you like that, if you got those three routes in your offense, God bless you, take them.
Good luck.
You're an idiot. I think he's sort of overselling, you know, Nikhil Harry as a route runner, though, a little bit. I think he
Keneal is. Keneal Harry?
Or Keneal. Nikhil or Kneel.
Nikhil.
Overselling. Yeah.
Knack.
I mean, some of the comps already for this kid. And I'm glad they took a wide receiver, but they're making Dez Bryant comparisons last night.
You're an idiot. Fitzgerald came up.
Well, another one is Anquan Boldin. I watched all these Arizona State games last year. He's going to be Anquan Boldin. Like, everyone's slow your roll. Right.
Matt in Providence, your thoughts on Nikhil Harry?
You're an idiot.
So, I got to say, I like the pick. Definitely need a receiver on the outside, but when are we going to start thinking about a quarterback? I mean, Brady's getting up there.
I'm with you.
Daniel Jones has been compared to Eli Manning. I mean, you got to start thinking about it at some point.
I'm with you, Matt. No, absolutely.
You're an idiot.
Start taking swings. 100% start taking swings, and real swings, not, you know, Benny Etling kind of swings.
Danny.
We're talking about real swings.
Eddie.
Start taking real swings at the thing. Josh Rosen for 48 to Miami. You like that deal for the Dolphins?
I do. I think that's smart. You know, Chris Greer, Brian Flores, I think that's a smart move. Bring him in. You know, he's a better talent than that. And let's see if he's a good enough quarterback to be your guy. But if he's not, okay, you gave up 48, you move on.
It's a great move for them.
Who did they bring in? Did they bring in Fitzpatrick?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, my. Keep him away from Fitzpatrick.
Well, but the point is, if he doesn't work out, what have you lost?
Yeah, so
you've lost 48. You're not even spending money. You're not compelled to build around him or give him the snaps.
And if he stinks, guess what? He stinks, and then you're in next year's draft with a high pick, which is much deeper for quarterbacks, and you just do what the Cardinals did to him. You usurp the kid. Sorry, we're drafting a newer, better, shinier model. You're out.
If you were the Patriots, would you rather spend 32 on Nikhil Harry or 32 on Josh Rosen?
Nikhil Harry. You know, because, look, Arizona has no leverage. So if you're asking me, like, you know, would I rather say like a 2020 second round pick or their 56 or whatever? Like Arizona, I don't know how Steve Keim still has a job. I mean, between the drunk driving thing and the way they handled this Josh Rosen, Kyler Murray situation, you had no leverage to begin with. Now you have even less leverage because you actually drafted Kyler Murray before you traded Rosen. So now everybody knows it's a fire sale at this point.
And Maz, I think you said this weeks ago, but more I thought about it, more you're right. If I'm Arizona, I just keep Rosen.
Absolutely. Keep them both.
Let them two compete. Get the best out of each other. The competition will help each along. You're not then just, you know, bent over for the lowest.
Totally.
You're selling low. You still command the city. Just keep them.
And the Redskins, Redskins.
And you create that competition between the two.
Yeah, I mean, the Redskins.
Now Murray's got you.
Something like that. I mean, Kirk Cousins wasn't as high a pick, but the same draft, RG3, Kirk Cousins.
Bingo.
Like, it's been done. So you have them, you pit the two against each other. It's so weird to me just to think about, though, that, you know, Arizona is really going all in with two guys that to me are unproven. Cliff Kingsbury had a losing record at Texas Tech in college. Kyler Murray played in a really quarterback-friendly system for Lincoln Riley at Oklahoma and played basically for 1 year, right, and was going to be a baseball guy. I mean, they're two really sort of unproven guys, and you have hitched your entire franchise to those two guys.
I mean, that could be a disaster.
Absolutely, it could be a disaster. All right, do we have a Gasper and Murray extravaganza tomorrow?
Sure do. A lot
to talk about.
Finally back together, Sports Hub Celtics show. All kinds of stuff starting at 11 tomorrow.
All you fantasy players at home, if you like that, if you got those three rounds in your offense, God bless you, take them.
Fantasy talk tomorrow, but no, you got Celtics and you have the Celtics hour at noon, correct?
Correct, yeah. We'll have Chris Forsberg, who's on his way out to cover the series in Milwaukee, trying to get Bob Ryan maybe to talk a little bit about John Havlicek, but that's...
I was going to say a surprise guest, but yeah, that would be the surprise.
So if there's the foremost expert on John Havlicek, it is Bob Ryan.
Yeah.
Bob Ryan, who once famously said to me, he was dead serious on 890 ESPN, talking about Kobe Bryant and the best player in the NBA and the best players of all time. He had John Havlicek over Kobe Bryant. In fact, he said, if Kobe Bryant and John Havlicek went one-on-one, good luck to Kobe.
Wow.
Good luck to Kobe, he said.
I told you.
That's how much he thought of John Havlicek.
I told you. I looked it up in that triple overtime against Phoenix. I said earlier that I think Havlicek didn't come off the floor. He played 58 minutes out of the 63.
That's unbelievable.
58. And he was that kind of player. He'd run you into the ground. He was in ridiculous shape.
Okay, Gasper, thanks for coming in. We appreciate it.
Good to see you guys.
Murray and Gasper tomorrow at 11.
You're an idiot.
I'm sorry, 11.
11 o'clock.
Celtics hour at noon. We've got an hour to go on Agenda Free Friday. We'll reset our Bruins thoughts and take your calls after Murray's 90-second update. Again, no commercials.
You're an idiot.
Face it, winter can wreak havoc on your parking lot. And the last thing your customers need is to dodge potholes, which might make them dodge your business altogether. Make sure they don't have bumps on the way to your door by calling U.S. Pavement. 1-800-PAVEMENT. Let U.S. Pavement smooth the road to your door. U.S. Pavement has paved the way for successful businesses all over New England since 1985. Call now, and a member of their expert team will evaluate your site and give you a price that won't leave a hole in your budget. Call U.S. Pavement at 1-800-PAVEMENT or visit uspavement.com.
The Doug Flutie Jr. Foundation for Autism is proud to be the presenting sponsor of the Boston Marathon's Adaptive Program for Runners, creating opportunities for runners with autism and other disabilities to participate in the legendary Boston Marathon.
Hi, my name is Mike Palmer, and I'm running as a member of the Adaptive Program for Runners in this year's Boston Marathon. Thanks to the Flutie Foundation, runners like me can achieve their dreams and finish the greatest race in the world.
The Flutie Foundation promotes inclusion for all to help everyone achieve their running dreams in Boston and beyond. Visit FlutieFoundation.org to get involved.
Felger.
I'm a liar and a phony. One of those no good nicks you keep running away from.
Maz.
I'm a man. Well, nobody's perfect.
Felger and Maz. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Krug settles the puck. Ducks the head, fires it on right wing Johansson to the right circle. Johansson, backhand toward the slot off the post. He scores!
Listen, when I play with him in Minnesota, we used to always joke around. Obviously, with him being from Massachusetts, we used to call him Baby Gronk because he is just that man-child. And he's not a child anymore. He's a grown man, and he's starting to realize now, and a comparable for me is Tomáš Hertl. Because Tomáš Hertl played in this league, and he showed flashes of brilliance, and Charlie Coyle was our best player in Minnesota when we had the playoffs against Chicago Blackhawks. When he would turn it on, you couldn't get the puck from him. And you saw in the one of the highlights earlier in the game, he was holding on to the puck the entire time. You cannot get it away from him. He can skate. He can hit. He has great
The Doug Flutie Jr. Foundation for Autism is proud to be the presenting sponsor of the Boston Marathon's Adaptive Program for Runners, creating opportunities for runners with autism and other disabilities to participate in the legendary Boston Marathon.
Hi, my name is Eric Fishman, and I'm running as a member of the Adaptive Program for Runners in this year's Boston Marathon. Thanks to the Flutie Foundation, runners like me can achieve their dreams and finish the greatest race in the world.
Woo. The Flutie Foundation promotes inclusion for all to help everyone achieve their running dreams in Boston and beyond. Visit FlutieFoundation.org to get involved.
The Dave McGilvery Finish Strong Foundation's goals are to inspire and empower youth across New England and beyond to increase physical activity, expand literacy, and build community and self-esteem through running, reading, and performing acts of kindness. Join us in our mission to empower youth through fitness and education. With your support, we can provide the opportunities for youth to cross their own finish line one step at a time. Together, we can build a stronger, healthier future. Go to DaveMcGilveryFoundation.org for more information.
Felger.
I'm a liar and a phony. One of those no good nicks you keep running away from.
Maz.
I'm a man. Well, nobody's perfect.
Felger and Maz. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Krug settles the puck. Ducks the head, fires it on right wing Johansson to the right circle. Johansson, backhand toward the slot off the post. He scores!
Listen, when I play with him in Minnesota, we used to always joke around. Obviously, with him being from Massachusetts, we used to call him Baby Gronk because he is just that man-child. And he's not a child anymore. He's a grown man, and he's starting to realize now, and a comparable for me is Tomáš Hertl. Because Tomáš Hertl played in this league, and he showed flashes of brilliance, and Charlie Coyle was our best player in Minnesota when we had the playoffs against Chicago Blackhawks. When he would turn it on, you couldn't get the puck from him. And you saw in the one of the highlights earlier in the game, he was holding on to the puck the entire time. You cannot get it away from him. He can skate. He can hit. He has great skill. But we only saw it once in a while. Now we're starting to put it more together more often. Look what Tomáš Hertl has done. He has realized, hey, when I want to take the puck to the net, they cannot do anything. Charlie Coyle's recognizing that. Man, he looks really, really effective right now.
Final hour of Gender Free Friday, driven by the Bernardi Auto Group. Felger and Maz from our Town Fair Tire Studios. That's Mike Rupp on the NHL Network, who played with Charlie Coyle in Minnesota. Said when they made the playoffs and played the Blackhawks those years, Charlie Coyle became their best player. Didn't see it all the time, but I don't know, maybe you're starting to see it here with the Bruins. And when they made that trade and you watched Charlie Coyle play on a nightly basis with the Bruins, he wasn't scoring. He wasn't putting up points. But you saw everything else. The way he skated, his size, the way he possessed the puck. Good three-zone player, good defensive player. Possession guy, he can't get the puck away from him. Sort of does it all. And he didn't score or assist. He had no points. It's like, so what does that add up to? But you saw the physical plant of Charlie Coyle. And maybe this is just his time. If his best time was the playoffs in Minnesota, maybe you're seeing it here with Boston, and that his game is just conducive to this time of year.
I mean, he's been one of their three best players in the playoffs. Really, you know, it's probably him, Marchand, and Rask.
I would say so. Okay, so could be even more important if David Krejci's out with that shoulder. So we'll see where that stands. Bruins are saying day-to-day. I'm a little dubious. I don't know, conflicting sort of signals on how bad David Krejci's hurt. But keep in mind now for this series going forward, David Krejci was lit up by Riley Nash, former Bruin who left in free agency that last offseason. Riley Nash hit David Krejci late. It was in the third period. Krejci still played a couple shifts and then didn't come out for the overtime period. But David Krejci was in his own zone. The puck was away, and Nash lit him up late. And you have Brad Marchand in the locker room today. Brad Marchand pointed out something that I think many Bruins noted, and maybe Riley Nash should note himself going forward in this series.
And I don't think he had a hit in 2 years with us, so...
Brad Marchand says of Riley Nash, I don't think he had a hit in 2 years when he was with us. And now he's lighting up David Krejci. If David Krejci's out, if I were Riley Nash coming up in game two, I'd have my head on a swivel.
No question about it, because that's exactly what Marchand's saying. Like, oh, okay, so now you're targeting our number two center. Is that what you're doing?
When you didn't touch a fly when you were here, even though Riley Nash did. But I'm just telling, this is the, whether Marchand's...
The Bruins feel like it was a hit.
Whether Marchand's right or wrong or whatever, I'm just telling the tenor of this thing. This is now the tenor. You could see it off the opening faceoff last night. More physical series. And more of a series, frankly, that's conducive to the Bruins. All right, so my big picture thought on the win last night was just it was a really important win. And I think you agree, Maz.
No question. Look, again, given all the circumstances going in, because we had talked about it, that if you look at it and you say teams coming off a long layoff, playing against a team that just completed a 7-game series, and I heard this on the ride home the other night. It was Pharrell on the bench that I heard on the night show. And they had a stat that was something like 2-9 teams were in game one in that situation. When coming off a long layoff against a team that had played a long series. And so you look at that, you look at the way the first period went where the Bruins absolutely dominated. Columbus was skating uphill that whole period. You're going to come out and lose that game on two deflections in the third period, 13 seconds apart? You can't lose that game. So especially because I think, you know, and this is sort of the common theory too, right? That the later the series goes, the more it'll benefit Columbus. So if Columbus starts stealing games early, well, you could be in trouble.
On the broadcast on TV, they were talking about that in the overtime last night and how that was going to benefit Columbus because they've had a little bit more rest. Now, thankfully, the Bruins ended up winning it, which they deserved to. That would have sucked if they lost that. I think it would have been borderline catastrophic if they did.
I think if they had lost that, that's potential psychological damage to the Bruins. And the hot goalie starts to creep into your head because Bobrovsky was really good in that game. It should have been 3-4-0 in the second period. Before Columbus got their act together. So if the Bruins had lost that game after coming out the way they came out, and now the goalie's in their head and that compounds, and now you press for a goal the next game, we all have seen how that has happened over the years. So that's what was at stake last night if they had lost that game. So it was huge that they came back and won that game. I think the physical nature of the series you saw from the jump, as we just discussed, I thought the goaltending on both sides was phenomenal. I thought Rask was great.
He was terrific again.
And I think in the early period, I give him a lot of credit because he did not see a lot of action, only a couple shots, really, in the first 10-plus minutes. But they were both testers. He bailed out Chara, who had a horrible turnover in his own zone, and he made an arm stop there. Maybe towards the end of that first period, but that kept it a 1-0 game for the Bruins, and Rask did not have nearly the amount of rubber that Bobrovsky did, but I thought Rask was terrific. Nothing he could do about either goal. I thought Bobrovsky, you saw the full Bobrovsky. This guy's a badass. Athletic, different than Rask. The way Bobrovsky can contort, get post to post, go into the splits, cover that whole net with, you know, just the way he plays, he is a badass, Sergei Bobrovsky. And if he had won that game, he starts to climb into your head. But I thought the goaltending was exceptional. I think the questions with David Pastrnak continue to get worse. It is bizarre how bad he is playing. It is absolutely like
he doesn't even look like the same guy.
Someone needs to check for psychological damage. Something's wrong with his head or his hand or maybe both. you know, we're just sort of playing around with it. Did he re-injure the hand in that game two against Toronto? Because he was never the same after that. He scored a couple up in Toronto, but they were both sort of, one was a deflection.
Correct.
And the other was a one-timer. So I don't want to totally take that off the board, but it feels like he's shooting less. And his passes are just all over the place, like bizarrely so. He can't hold on to the puck. It's always a turnover. Did he hurt his hand again in game two against Toronto? Is he now medicating it? And is there a combination between an injured hand and too many meds? Because he's playing like he's loopy. There's something wrong there. Something seriously wrong there, to the point where Cassidy, who keeps playing him and giving every chance to get out of it, I think should do the opposite and start sitting him. Start sitting him. That's another note. The note of, I think, Johansson and Coyle, never mind Sweeney having a good deadline. The importance of that secondary scoring is huge. I keep saying, I never bought nor liked the commentary that the Bruins live and die with that first line. That means you're not a good team. They need other lines going. That's why Krejci's so important. But if Johansson and Coyle are going to pick up that slack, fine. Huge development for him. Huge. Finally, I just hated the way the game was called. 8 penalties. Guys diving all over the place and the refs giving it to him. I hated that. I hated that. It's going to be a physical series. It's the playoffs. Don't take the cheese on guys hitting the ice. I'm talking about both teams. I didn't like the Yamana power plays. Although the Bruins' PK was a key to the victory last night, just about.
Well, their penalty kill was excellent last night. Really terrific.
Those are our Bruins reset thoughts. You can join us on that or anything else at 617-779-0985. Mike in the truck has been waiting patiently on the Bees. Go ahead, Mike.
I told you, Mike, I had a feeling about Charlie Coyle, and man, is he proving me right now. And the importance of last night's win, like you guys were saying, after Columbus scored those two quick goals, you're kind of thinking, okay, Tuukka's going to wilt. The team's going to start scrambling. They're going to do the same thing to us that they did to Tampa in their first game. And that didn't happen. The Bruins settled it down, keep grinding.
It's right, and now it doesn't compound. Because that was the kind of game that has a chance to lead into another one.
Sure. Like, especially because, think about it, we'd be saying, wow, they blew that game and they lost Krejci. Like, that's what we'd be dwelling on.
So different tone. But I will tell you, after the second goal, and just being in the building, the crowd immediately started like a Let's Go Bruins chant. I don't want to get all corny and fanny on you. But, and the team, I thought, played well after that second goal.
Yeah, there was overall tight booty syndrome going on.
The whole
they picked it up.
The whole feeling was not like,
dead.
It was really sort of just the opposite, and I was surprised. But I think if you would actually end up losing that game, that does set in. That sets in among the team, that sets in the building, and that has a way of, again, compounding.
So maybe that's what Cassidy's talking about, the euphoria of Game 7 spilling over. And the other thing we haven't talked enough about, Johansson. That
skill plays.
Oh, my gosh.
The first one especially.
Oh, my. That's a backhand. A backhand pass, a one-timer guy to beat one of the best goalies in the league. Like, that is a great play. Unbelievable.
Bill in Rhode Island on the Patriots draft. Go ahead, Bill.
I say on this quarterback, let's just call him Harry and make it easy.
Done.
The second thing, I'm going to give Maz a new name today. It's Debbie Downer. And the reason he's Debbie Downer, because that's the word for negative people that are never happy.
I've heard about that, yeah.
Yeah, Debbie Downer. So from now on, when I call in, I'm going to ask for Downer. Because this guy doesn't like anything that happens with any team in New England.
That's not true. You just don't remember the positive comments. None of us do, but he does have them. Every now and then. They're hard to remember.
I have to have this conversation with my dad every time I see him. Maz hates everything. The dad, not everything.
It's not true.
Maz picked the Bruins to win the cup in 2011.
I did. Yeah, well, that was 8 years
ago. Let's not go back 8 years. Can we pick up something in the last couple days that he liked?
I picked the Bruins to beat the Leafs in 7.
Okay, that's true.
That slipped through the cracks, though.
Did you pick the Pats over the Rams?
He did.
I did.
Yeah. Yep.
So
I was very disappointed in him, but he did.
I did. I picked the Pats. Yep.
What else? What else does he like?
I picked the Chiefs in the AFC title game. But I picked the Pats in the Super Bowl.
We've got Cam and Methuen on the Bees. Hi, Cam.
Yeah, real quick. When secondary scoring is a part of the Bruins game, it takes pressure off the top lines. The Bruins, you know, they need that, especially with the guys we have being fragile and, you know, oftentimes needing that extra jump to get going. Pasta looks like he's playing with a friggin' lefty stick. In years past, Bruins have had trouble putting the puck in the net, you know, third, fourth line, even second line scoring wasn't producing. You know, right now Sweeney's off the hook with those guys looking good. And the Bruins looked good last night besides
you know, when they shotted themselves for those few minutes.
Okay, Cam, thanks for the call. Pastrnak looks like he's playing with a field hockey stick.
I like the way he put it there. It's good. He looks like he's playing with a lefty stick.
I mean, really?
Yeah.
There were some passes.
Yeah, so with a guy with that kind of scoring ability and touch, how do you not think it's the thumb? That's immediately what I go to, because he injured that thumb. You figure it was going to affect him when he came back. It didn't. But now there's something going on there, because there's no touch. The puck comes to him. He's jittery. He can't even make a pass to one of his teammates. It's usually going into the corner or somewhere else, and he's afraid to shoot. It's the thumb. It's got to be.
You know what? I'm buying into that.
Me too.
Because, again, it's... There's just so many sloppy plays where it looks like the puck's going nowhere near where it's supposed to. You have to think something's going on.
I mean, I for his sake, I almost hope it is. Because if it's just a slump, like, dude, you've got to do something. If that's just something in your head, what are we going to do about it? If that's just your head, that's scary that you could fall off that far.
He should be able to shoot, though. It was his left hand. He would lose some control, but it feels like he's lost everything.
He's lost it all.
If it's his head, I got the remedy.
Okay. Meanwhile,
Maz knows.
Meanwhile,
never shot like that in your life on that golf
course. That's true. Yeah, it was great.
Meanwhile, on your knees, Boston. On your knees, Jones. The big board does it again.
Michael Felger, Tony Maserati, Felger and Maz.
The Dave McGilvery Finish Strong Foundation's goals are to inspire and empower youth across New England and beyond to increase physical activity, expand literacy, and build community and self-esteem through running, reading, and performing acts of kindness. Join us in our mission to empower youth through fitness and education. With your support, we can provide the opportunities for youth to cross their own finish line one step at a time. Together, we can build a stronger, healthier future. Go to DaveMcGilveryFoundation.org for more information.
Face it, winter can wreak havoc on your parking lot. And the last thing your customers need is to dodge potholes, which might make them dodge your business altogether. Make sure they don't have bumps on the way to your door by calling U.S. Pavement. 1-800-PAVEMENT. Let U.S. Pavement smooth the road to your door. U.S. Pavement has paved the way for successful businesses all over New England since 1985. Call now, and a member of their expert team will evaluate your site and give you a price that won't leave a hole in your budget. Call U.S. Pavement at 1-800-PAVEMENT or visit uspavement.com.
Looking for hope? House of Possibilities offers children and adults with disabilities a path to greater independence. From social to recreational programs to overnight respite and career and community access opportunities, House of Possibilities is changing the way people see disabilities and their program participants see themselves. Visit houseofpossibilities.org to learn more or to support their work. That's houseofpossibilities.org. House of Possibilities. See what belonging can do.